Well, welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. We are broadcasting today from F. Hopox Tower, Once for All Tower here at Concordia Seminary, as we read through Hebrews, and we are in chapter 7, and beginning almost into the thick and thin of the argument as to the superiority of Christ's high priestly office. And so we read last week through verse 6, and this is this interesting argument in which Melchizedek is being shown to be superior to Abraham, and then the inference, which the other shoe that's about to drop, is that this makes Melchizedek superior to Levi, and his priesthood superior to the Levitical priesthood. So we had verse 6. Which I can just kind of quickly retranslate. And the one who is not genealogically reckoned from them, that is, from the descendants of Abraham, has received a tithe from Abraham, and he has blessed Abraham, who is now described as the one who has the promises. So again, the point is that Melchizedek is in some important sense a superior person of higher status, higher standing than the patriarch Abraham. And that argument is now about to be laid sort of bare here, beginning at verse 7. So Hebrews chapter 7, verse 7. And the writer writes, I suppose that's kind of redundant. I used to work for the Department of Redundancy Department. Verse 7. Choriste pases antilagias ta elaton, hiapatu kretanas eologetai. Now, the noun antilogia means contention or dispute. And this is a little rhetorical move. Choris plus the genitive means apart from. So he says, now, apart from all dispute, in other words, it's kind of like saying, it's obvious that. So it's kind of a little bit of a rhetorical move. Apart from all dispute, ta elaton. Now, elaton is an evil form. It's the comparative of mikros. You can see that there are no letters the same. But English is like that, too. It's, well, no, I guess smaller is pretty regular. But, well, anyway, it's irregular. You might also see it actually spelled in Greek literature with a double sigma instead of a double tau. Apart from all contention, the smaller thing, here referring to the person, Abraham, by the hypotu kretanos, and kreton, the nominative singular would be kreton with omega, is another comparative form, irregular, from agathos. I think now that I say that, I've forgotten, so I'm going to look at my notes. Oh, yes, agathos, I guessed right. So we've got the comparative of small and the comparative of good. So the sense is clear enough. The lesser one is blessed, eologetai, present indicative passive, third singular. The lesser one is blessed by the better one. You could render it somewhat literally. And in this case, Abraham is the lesser, and Melchizedek is the greater. So at least we have a short sentence, but we should have. Dr. Vels, in his not-so-fundamental Greek grammar, you know, actually has some of these very irregular comparative forms in the grammar. But, of course, that's in the part that nobody's learning because you're getting ready for the qualifying exam. Right. I'm teaching Fall Greek in the – why am I saying this at Greek Club? I'm teaching Fall Greek in the fall, another redundancy. I think I'm going to move chapter 37, which is the case usage chapter. I think I'm going to move it to about chapter 31 because it's such an important chapter. But by that time, again, everybody's just sucking air, you know. And the Greek word for air is aera, which I'm happy to point out. Any questions on verse 7? Pretty short, nice, and straightforward. Verse 8 will be elliptical, just in case you were hoping that you'd have all the words you need. Okay, verse 8. Kai hoda men dekatas apathneskantes anthropoi lambanusin. ekede mar tiruminos hati ze. All right, so the argument continues. So after making the kind of the abstract point in verse 7 that the lesser is blessed by the greater, the writer says, and here. Now, hoda is just a particle that means here, and it can have a physical sort of locational sense, but it can also be used logically. So in this case, or and here in this instance, on the one hand, now let's see, we do have a menda. You can see the da actually that's right below it in Nestle. It happens to be right below it in the next line. But here, on the one hand, now a dekate is a tithe. And so this noun would parse as, it could actually be genitive singular. Oh, no, it wouldn't, because it would be dekates, dekates. So this has to be accusative plural. So we're hoping that this is the direct object of something, right? Which it is. And then we've got apothneskantes anthropoi. So apothneskantes you might recognize as a participle from apothnesko, which means to die. And it's masculine plural nominative, and its referent is right next to it. And even though we don't have any articles, we'll take it as attributive position adjectival. What kind of anthropoi? Dying anthropoi. So in this case, on the one hand, men who die, lambanusen. Yes, that is present, indicative, active, third person plural. And all God's children said, amen, right? Men who die receive, and now you get the direct object, tithes. And the reference to the men who die is Levitical priests. See, because they only serve an office for a while, and then they croak, right? But there, now, a K, again, can just mean literally you're pointing to a place there, or it can mean, as likely here, in that case. So in this case, hoda, a K. In this case, in that case, right? But there, and now we have to start woodenly, martireo means to bear witness. So, but there, being witnessed that he lives. Ze is just the present indicative from zao. Well, actually it would be he, she, it lives. It's just third person present indicative active. So now we have to supply something, right? So if you did it literally, verse 8 would read, and here on the one hand, men who die receive tithes. But there, in that case, being testified that he lives. End of sentence. So you have to supply something. And there's a bunch of different ways you could do this. I'm going to suggest that we take martirumenos as, and yes, Greek is allowed to do this, a substantive. That is, pretend it's got an article on the front of it. The one who is being testified that he lives, now fill in the blank, receives a tithe. Okay? Because thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, and Melchizedek has no end of days, which we learned in the first couple of verses of chapter 7. Right? So, now the writer to the Hebrews is comparing the fact that Levitical priests live only a certain period of time and then they die. But Melchizedek, in some sense, is deathless, and the one who's a priest after the order of Melchizedek is deathless. Again, you see how heavily he's leaning on Psalm 110, verse 4. But we really have to supply a lot of stuff. At the end of the verse. The other way you could solve it after the ekede is you could take the participle there as a periphrastic participle and just supply the linking verb. And then you would translate it, but there, or in that case, it is being testified that he lives. Something like that. But you clearly have to fill in a blank. Right? So... All right, questions about verse 8. Again, in Hebrews, it's pars or die. And
actually, I have a question concerning the use of Hati.
Yes?
So would it, it's being testified that he lives, how would you describe that grammatically? Or, not that I'm big into categories, but it's being testified, and then it puts focus, or like focus on the say.
Well, because of the meaning of martyreo, you'd probably just describe this as introducing indirect discourse, right? So it is being testified that he lives, or the one who is testified that he lives, right? Yep. So, and see there, even though you're not big into categories, we had a category for it, right? That's right. That's right. So, yeah, good question. Good. Anything else on verse 8? Okay, now we start verse 9 with another little rhetorical flourish, actually. And again, not that I'm competent to really evaluate these things, but the standard view is that the writer to the Hebrews is clearly the most sort of technically proficient and elegant writer of Greek in the New Testament. Just, you know, he's sort of head and shoulders. Sometimes people suggest that Paul is the author. I don't think so. I mean, Paul does not write like this, as far as I know Paul, at least. So anyway, verse 9, I'll read it, and we can just do that one verse. Kai hos epas epein de Abraham kai lewe ha dekates lambanon de dekatotai. Now, epos is a noun that you don't see very often in the New Testament. To be frank, I can't remember seeing it anyplace else, although it may be there. And it simply means word. And so if you can kind of guess what this might mean as word to say. And what it's the equivalent of so to speak. See? So again, the writer is doing a little bit of a rhetorical flourish here, if you could call it that, and so to speak, through Abraham, also Levi. Now let's describe Levi. Ha dekatas lambanon. Levi, the receiving tithes guy. De dekatotai. Now remember that dekatao means to receive a tithe from somebody else. And it's hard to, this is a perfect passive, could be middle, perfect passive form. You can see the duplication on the front of the stem and then the tie ending, right? So this is perfect passive indicative third singular. And the way you might render it is like this, through Abraham, also Levi, the receiving tithes guy has been tithified, if I could say it like that. And I could just say it like that because I just did. So has had a tithe taken from him. See, because it's the passive of the verb, which means to receive a tithe. Right? At this point, Chris, watch the windows. People are going to start going out the windows. Here on the third floor of, what tower are we at? This is a Once for All Tower, I think, today, right? So, and then we're going to explain how this is the case, and this is kind of an interesting argument. So we'll just forge on into 10, and then we'll kind of back up and see if there are comments or questions. Verse 10, Eti gar ente as fiu tu patras ein hata sin entes en auto Melchizedek. Well, that makes sense. For still in the asphus, it's an evil third declension noun. It means loins, okay, or middle section, right? And this is, you can guess because it's after N, is dative singular. So, for still in the loins of the father, ein, he was, the imperfect of ameh, when Melchizedek, sun antao is the verb there. So it's an alpha contract verb. At the end of the stem, you can see the alpha lengthen to eta and add the sigma. Okay. And the temporal augment for sun an tao lengthens the alpha to eta, so it's in between the sun and the an tao part. So this is actually, believe it or not, only a weak aorist, indicative, active, third singular. For he was in the loins of the Father when Melchizedek greeted him. See? So this really, you know, it really assumes a very sort of a, well, I guess this is the right word, organic connection between Abraham and Levi, right? Since Levi is one of the sons of Abraham, and it's from Levi. In fact, I just read that in my devotions this morning, that that the descendants of Levi are consecrated. Of course, Aaron and his brothers are sons, are Levites, as is Moses. But the whole tribe then, it's in Numbers, I think, is designated as priestly servants underneath the high priestly order of Aaron. So do you get the argument? See? Melchizedek is greater than Abraham, and Abraham is greater than Levi. And when Melchizedek showed his superiority and received a tithe from Abraham, in a sense, hos epos epein, so to say, Levi also tithed to Melchizedek. Because he was in his loins. That's right. That's right. What this shows is, and this is part of the biblical worldview in general, is we are not independent, freestanding individuals. That there is an organic nature to the human race, if I could say it that way, to human creatures. The most profound place this is demonstrated, of course, is in Paul's theology of the first Adam, second Adam, right? So that in Adam, all die. So in Christ, all will be made alive, right? So really, in this sense, our brothers and sisters in probably parts of Asian culture and African culture, maybe other places, have much more of a chance to grasp this kind of corporate reality. And the sacraments actually kick in here too, because you and I are not only baptized into Christ, but we're actually baptized into each other, because we're baptized into one body. So, and that's not just some sort of a fiction that we pretend is true. The sad thing is that it's a reality that we forget is true. So I think if we could, well, never mind, I was going to make a speech there, and I just felt a soapbox slipping under my foot, so I won't go there. So questions on verses 9 and 10. Very interesting argument, isn't it? So anything at all? Okay. Good. Now we have a really long, complicated sentence that's incomplete in its form. So that'll be easy. It's actually verse 11, which is one sentence. So we'll take it up. It's a question, and it starts with a conditional clause, A, right? So here we go. A men un teleosis diates leoetikes hierozines ein. There's the verb of the A clause. Now let's explain. Hala Oscar ep autes nenamothetetai. Now here's the then clause. Tis etikrea kata tain toxin melchisedek heteron anistastha hierea kai u kata tain toxin aron legistai. All right, let's clean it up. For now, men, there is no de to correspond to this men, okay? But I had to look this up. A men un together is kind of an emphatic un. So if therefore, or indeed therefore, teleosis. Now, you might be able to guess what this means. It means something like completion or perfection. Because we have telos, goal, we have teleao, which means to complete. And this is a nominative singular, feminine singular nominative, tele. So this is the subject of something. For if perfection through the, and you could probably guess that leoetic case means Levitical, and hierosines is a word for priesthood, For if perfection ain was through the Levitical priesthood. Now let's have a little parenthetical explanation. For the people on the basis of it, and autes is feminine singular genitive, and the easiest antecedent for that would be priesthood, hierosines, just right before it. For the people on the basis of it, nomotheteo means to give or establish laws. And this is, you can see the duplication, another perfect, and see the tie ending, so it's middle or passive, taken passive here. And it means to receive laws or be lawified, again, to do it awkwardly and woodenly. For the people on the basis of it received laws. And the laws there probably refers to the instructions about sacrifices, right? Because it's through the Levitical priesthood that they received, or on the basis of the Levitical priesthood, they received laws. So let's do that again, and then we'll get to the tis eti crea. If indeed, therefore, perfection was through the Levitical priesthood, for the people received laws on the basis of that priesthood, now comes the question. Tis, interrogative pronoun, tis eti crea. Now, I'm sorry, you're going to look to the end of the sentence and look for a verb. It's not there. But this is actually the heart of the then clause. What is need? So you just supply is, right? What still is the need? Now, this is one of these instincts that a person might conceivably develop after, I don't know, reading Greek for 20 years. When you see crea, you're going to think, oh, I'll bet the writer is going to explain what the need is, and I'll bet he's going to explain it with an infinitive. And yes, Dave, there is a label for that use of the infinitive. It's
objective.
Well, I was going to need. Yeah, that's exactly right. The need of something, right? Well, it is right, but what you call it was an epexegetical infinitive. You're explaining what the need is. If we had a genitive after, it would be the need of something, and then it would be an objective genitive. Right, so that's exactly right. So what still is the need? Now, here's the need. Need, and then scan about six words later, we have anistasthai from anistemi, and it has an intransitive active meaning, to arise. Okay, who's doing the arising? Remember that an infinitive will have an accusative subject. We've got heteron on one side and priest hierea on the other. You can take them together, another priest to arise, or you could translate it, another to arise, comma, a priest. You could take it either way. And then in front of it, according to the order of Melchizedek. But now we're not done because we have another infinitive. So chi, flip the page, and not to be said from Lego, according to the order of Aaron. So all the words after crea are explaining the need. What's the need? For another priest to arise according to the order of Melchizedek, and not to be called according to the order of Aaron. And see, the other interesting thing about this is that Psalm 110, I mean, this is part of the argument, it's a little implicit. Psalm 110 comes, it's a psalm of David, it comes after the establishment of the Levitical priesthood, and it's a prophecy of the Messiah. Right? So if the Levitical priesthood brought perfection, why do you need David to write as a prophet Psalm 110 verse 4? That's his argument. And Christ is Messiah, high priest, after the order of Melchizedek. Now, here's the other thing we're going to clean up on this conditional sentence. Because in context, we know that, backing up to the very beginning of verse 11, there is no perfection through. So in other words, he's, for the sake of argument, he's giving you a conditional sentence which is not according to fact. It's actually probably a contrary to fact conditional sentence. The problem is in the then clause, you don't have a verb, and there's a little particle that you're missing. Does anybody conceivably remember the particle that's supposed to be there? Correct. A contrary to fact conditional sentence in Greek needs a plus a past time indicative in the first clause and on plus the past time indicative in the second clause. The problem is everybody knows this in Greek, and so you get a fair number of these with no on. This one has no on and no verb, okay? So, which makes everybody want to stop coming to Greek club and come to Hebrew club, right? Because you don't have so many categories, right? Exactly. So here's the way it works. The basic sentence, and we'll stop here, is if perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, for the people received laws on the basis of it, what still need would there be? Something like that. For there be for another priest to arise according to the order of Melchizedek. But the fact of the matter is that there's been a change of priesthood. So it's, again, the linchpins of the argument are the messianic nature of Psalm 110, verse 4, right? And the fact that Melchizedek is superior to Abraham. And so the one who is a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek is superior to Levi. And he offers a superior service. Not, and as you know, as you probably remember, the argument, it's superior on two counts. He goes into a better sanctuary, and he offers a better sacrifice. Right? This makes me tired. All right, Greek Club, we'll pick up at verse 12 next week. So thank you very much.